program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thank you very much for finding us, which is usually pretty difficult to do. But once you find us, it's very easy to get hooked. It is 7 past the hour. A couple of stories on the Olympics that I want to get to tonight. Not the games, but the corporatization of the Olympics. It's really crazy. Some guy in, not in London, outside of London, different city in England, a guy runs a butcher shop. So to celebrate the Olympics, he took 5 sausages, big sausages, and made the 5 rings that represent the Olympic logo. And he hung them outside his shop. And no kidding, the Olympic advertising cops showed up and made him take it down. If you do this sort of thing in the UK right now, I guess anywhere, but in the UK especially, the fine is the equivalent of $30,000. I don't know how many euros that is. What, 35, 40,000 euros? 30 grand. If you try to celebrate the Olympics by displaying anything that has to do with them. And you wonder why I think the whole thing sucks. We'll get to that later. Baby carriages apparently aren't just for babies anymore. Did you hear about this? This couple that I think should be nominated as the Parents of the Year, they... Well, here's the story. Police in Manchester, New Hampshire, were investigating a report of an assault made by 2 men who claimed someone they knew only as John demanded money and hit one of them in the face with a gun when they refused. This is according to the Manchester Union Leader newspaper. Okay, you got it. A couple of guys said a man came up to them and demanded money and hit one of them in the face with a gun when they said no. Well, the police tracked down the suspect. He turned out to be Jonathan Bijoule, 28. And the cops approached him while he was walking his daughter with, I guess it's his the little girl's mother, Cassandra Gagnon. This is according to WBZ Television in Boston. When police approached the couple, she took control of the carriage and attempted to walk away. But the cops came up and stopped them. There was no incident. But according to Manchester Police Lieutenant, quote, further investigation led to the recovery of a loaded 9mm handgun in the baby carriage under the child's seat. The gun was later determined to have been stolen. The guy here, Bijoule, is accused of armed robbery with a stolen handgun. Bail set at $65,000 cash only. In addition, a probability cause hearing is set for August 1st to explore possible felony charges of armed robbery, theft by unauthorized taking of a firearm, and a felon in possession of a firearm. The dude, Jonathan Bijoule, tried to tell the judge in court that the woman with him, apparently the baby's mother, didn't know about the gun or the robbery, and the dude added, quote, I'm not looking to cause any problems. And the woman told the judge that she has 2 children, and she was supposed to start a job yesterday, but she is charged with felony falsification of evidence and is due in court on August 1st for a hearing. The judge set bail for her at $1,500 cash. Nice couple, huh? Can you imagine the kind of life their kids have? 9mm handgun loaded underneath the baby. Hey, he has the Second Amendment right to do that, right? Diana in Florida writes, monitoring firearm sales, the subject line. Diana writes, Mike, with the current Congress, we have zero prospect. Oh, wait, let me stop a second. I said I don't talk about this subject. I said that last night. And normally I don't. The couple there, that's not about gun control. That's about 2 more half-witted morons who God only knows what else they've done to their kids. So I'm not talking about gun control. I really am not. But I got a couple of emails from people I'm going to share with you. Diana writes, Mike, with the current Congress, we have zero prospect of being able to ban or restrict the sale of assault rifles. But I don't see any reason the ATF can't start monitoring the sale of assault rifles and their ammunition as part of the ATF's current regulatory powers without requiring the passage of a new law. There was a time when the logistics of doing so would have been insurmountable. But with the computer networking resources available today, it's definitely feasible. When one person starts purchasing the kind and amount of weaponry that James Holmes did, it should sound an alarm at ATF and send an agent out to investigate. Setting aside the danger an individual person so armed may pose, stockpiling large amounts of ammo in their home or apartment surely constitutes an explosion and fire hazard to their neighbors. So it would at least be grounds for the local fire marshal to enter and inspect the premises. Such an inspection would surely have put a stop to the incident in Aurora before it could happen. Deep Throat taught us to, quote, follow the money, end quote. Surely James Holmes has taught us to, quote, follow the guns and ammo. Diana in Florida. From this is from Huffington Post. It's not an email, but to show you how stupid Romney is. I mean, the man, he's starting to make George Bush look like a learned Yale graduate. Romney has got to be the dumbest sack of air ever to run for president. Listen to this. Romney yesterday said many of the weapons obtained by the shooting suspect in Colorado were obtained illegally, and that changing laws won't prevent gun-related tragedies. The problem is, of course, the firearms that he used to kill 12 people and wound 58 or 68 were obtained legally. Romney, you dumb son of a bitch. Is there a stupider man out there running for the Republicans do this every time, don't they? And the reason this happens is because in the primaries, the halfwits who vote Republican, because of the money that Romney had, he had unlimited supply of money. Remember, the halfwits who voted for him, they don't determine his candidacy. The money used in these primary states to overwhelm the other morons who are running on the Republican ticket, that's what determined. And the dumbassery tribe, the Republicans or right-wingers, just go out and vote for the one that is swamping the airwaves with the most ads, because these people can't think. They watch the TV and go, oh, well, I'm going to vote for him. I'm going to vote for him. All the weapons were obtained legally. Romney told NBC News in an interview, quote, this person shouldn't have had any kind of weapons and bombs and other devices, and it was illegal for him to have many of those things already, but he had them. And so he can sometimes hope that just changing the law will make all bad things go away. It won't. Does that sound like a goddamn five-year-old talking? Does that sound like a little five-year-old kneeling down beside the bed at night because mommy and daddy have taught her to kneel down beside the bed and pray to the sky spook to make all the bad things go away? Please, God, help my doggy get well because he's been vomiting all over the rug. And please make sure that Uncle Charlie recovers from the self-inflicted gunshot wound, whatever that means, God. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. Mind-boggling. Somebody ought to tell Mitt, no, the guns and the ammo and everything the guy had, he obtained legally. He's just a dumbass. Wear the dust cap, slouch over, cool like a hunchback. Don't discuss things, shout the last word. Put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ, that's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who wanna be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down. Oh, dumb, dumb, dumb.
Flying Monkey Free Zone. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. One more thing about Romney and guns. When he was governor in 2004, this is what Romney said about the kind of weapons that James Holmes used to shoot 70 people. This is when Romney signed an assault weapons ban when he was governor of Massachusetts. You understand that? He signed it into law. This is what he said, quote, "These guns are not made for recreation or self-defense. They are instruments of destruction with the sole purpose of hunting down and killing people," end quote. And now this weasel son of a bitch tries to hide by saying, well, you know, this guy had a bunch of illegal guns. Holmes broke no laws when he purchased the rifle, the shotgun, and the Glock handguns. Oh, and he passed the required background checks. So, you know, you folks that are going to vote for Romney, you're sicker than I thought. I mean, you really are. You're just sick in the head. Jesus God, how can you do that? How can you do that? Now, in the interest of balanced reportage on this program, Obama, in one of his most direct statements on gun control, this is at Huffington Post also, since his election, he said yesterday he called for what he called a, quote, common sense, end quote, approach to assault rifle sales. Common sense approach to assault what's that, Mr. President? What the hell is a common sense approach to assault rifle sales? He said, quote, no mentally unbalanced individual, end quote, should be able to get their hands on such weapons. Oh, my God. A common sense approach on assault rifles. He went on to say, quote, I, like most Americans, believe that the Second Amendment guarantees an individual the right to bear arms, end quote. Well, okay, maybe a lot of people, maybe the majority does believe that. I damn sure don't. I don't believe the Second Amendment guarantees that at all. What it guarantees is a well-regulated militia in order to maintain such. Congress shall pass no laws. And we have a well-regulated militia. It's called the State National Guard. Never mind. Obama was talking to the National Urban League Convention in New Orleans. He went on to say, quote, I think we recognize the traditions of gun ownership that passed on from generation to generation, that hunting and shooting are part of a cherished national heritage, end quote. Really? A cherished national heritage? Hunting and shooting. Okay. Didn't know that. Obama went on, quote, but I also believe that a lot of gun owners would agree that AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals, that they belong on the battlefield of war, not on the streets of our cities. I believe the majority of gun owners would agree we should do everything possible to prevent criminals and fugitives from purchasing weapons. Mr. President, this boy was not a criminal, and he wasn't a fugitive. So your argument is full of owl droppings. Do you understand, Mr. Obama, with all due respect? He goes on, and we should check someone's criminal record before they can check out a gun seller. Before they can check, I don't know what that means. Obama called for new restrictions barring mentally unstable people from purchasing weapons. He said, quote, these steps shouldn't be controversial. They should be common sense, end quote. Holmes was not, in retrospect, at the time he made the purchases, an identifiable unstable person. How are you going to do that, Mr. President? You see, so all this is election year garbage. You know what you do? You ban these goddamn things outright, totally. Somebody wants to own a shotgun, a 22 caliber rifle, a 30 caliber rifle. A caliber rifle for actual hunting? Okay, fine. You want to own a handgun because you feel that somebody's going to break into your house and steal your china? Okay, fine. You want to carry a handgun because your life has been threatened? Okay, fine. But anything that I mean, when you look at these stock photo or stock video after one of these shootings from the nearest gun store, and you look at what's displayed. Jesus H. Christ, it looks like stuff that the SEAL team would carry as they went to go get a bin Laden. So, no, Mr. President, screw a bunch of heritage. To hell with saying pass on from generation to generation. No, you get rid of them. You make them illegal. You tell people, okay, if you're found with one of these, automatically 10 years. Period. That's it. You go to jail. You go to goddamn jail because we're not going to allow these. You want a rifle? Have a rifle. You want a shotgun? Have a shotgun. You want a handgun? Help yourself. You want an AK-47 or assault rifle or a Kalashnikov? Unless you're in the military and you're deployed, we find you with one of these, you're going to jail. Oh, see, Obama's a communist. He wants to disarm everybody. Quick, everybody, run out and buy guns. Quick, run, run, run. Go get him. Run. Go get him, gun. Hurry. Before the hour, they're stuck someplace. Mike and Kathy, well, you know how the Gumshoe Series has been running. Springfield is the town they're in now, a town that was set up, well, let's just go to episode 7 of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Two travelers blast beyond the barriers of space and time through a million would-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. Yes, radio listeners, it's time once again to join truth seekers from around the globe who anxiously await the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
You remember last time Mike, Kathy, and Asta followed Molly to the mysterious Mr. Moody, who not only repaired their AE-35 unit, but also filled them in on the strange goings-on in the little town of Springfield. Powerful antidepressants have been dumped into the town's water supply to keep the residents docile while they produce sitcoms for an unsuspected nation. Put on the coffee pot, kiddies, because it's time for tonight's thrilling episode, Chapter 6, Speeding Doom.
After a couple of days of living in Springfield and drinking the water, you'll fit right in. You might even start to like Ricky Nelson's music. God help you.
This is one big reality show. We've got to get out of here.
Who runs this town?
Well, who do you want to know about first? The Republicans or the aliens?
Well, thanks for everything, but we have to go now.
That's right. Mike, don't we have to?
We have to get back, because we've got...
This thing.
Yeah, we've got a thing.
Definitely a thing. We've got to...
Yeah, so we'll just be going along now.
What about this? Yeah, AE-35.
Right. How much do we owe you?
We already paid up when you dropped it off when you first moved here.
Okay, so we're good then. Ready, Kathy?
Yeah, we better get going.
But you can't go now. Mr. Moody's not... not done telling you about the town.
Oh, well, how much longer will this take?
Just till the end of the episode, I promise.
Kathy, remember, we've got that thing.
What could it hurt to hear him out?
Okay, you're the boss. Okay, Moody, you're on. Tell us about the Republicans and the aliens.
Well, now I've got to ask you some questions. In all these shows we're talking about, did you ever see any black folks?
No.
Poor people?
No.
Did you ever hear anybody ever talk about unions?
No.
Civil rights? Women's rights? National politics? World affairs?
No, 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 and no. What are you getting at?
Here in Springfield, we got better things to talk about. Like Bud trying to get a job as a stock clerk, or Beavis got a crush on Miss Canfield, or Ozzy and that dimwit Joe Randolph think up a practical joke to pull on their wives. You know, important stuff like that.
But what does that have to do with aliens and Republicans?
It's Republicans and aliens in that order.
It's more like Republicans than aliens.
That's right, little girl. First Republicans, then aliens. Now, looky here. You got a whole town taking drugs so they can stand to churn out a version of American life that doesn't have any poor people in it. There's no need to talk about civil rights because there aren't any black folks. And everybody is happy at the job, so who needs unions?
It's a Republican paradise. No sex or rock and roll.
So who do you suppose was behind the scenes here? Who do you suppose was footing the bill to put out the idea that this is what it's like in the good old USA?
Republicans?
Right you are, little lady. The same folks that dreamed up I Like Ike.
Now tell them about the aliens.
Well, don't rush me. I'm getting to it. Did you ever see that movie that came out a few years back? Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
They filmed that here?
No, of course not. But the writer fellow who wrote the story drove through here. And Springfield must have made quite an impression on him.
You mean there really are pods from outer space? And when you go to sleep?
That's not how it works at all.
You mean the movie lied?
That was a movie. They had to change a bunch of stuff around so they could get it made. They had to make it more dramatic.
What do you mean?
Well, the process is pretty dull, actually. You gotta remember, everybody was shuffling around like zombies from the drugs in the water, and that makes folks susceptible to the collective hive mind of the Borg.
The Borg?
Yeah, that's what they call it.
The Borg. How can you tell when that's happened to someone?
That's easy. Nobody gets any older. Well, a little bit. But it takes a really long time.
Well, take a look at the Beaver, or anybody from those shows. They've been on for years, but hardly anybody's aged at all.
But those are reruns, aren't they?
Nope. After a while, the aliens realize there wasn't any reason to write new stories, so they keep doing the same scripts over and over.
But what's the point? Why are they doing this?
You know, for a smart fella, you sure don't know very much about aliens.
Once again, not covered in the manual.
What aliens always want? To take over the planet, that's what.
But world domination through sitcoms? That's crazy.
Not if it works. What's the name of that German philosopher fella? You know, the one who said, if you gaze into the abyss gazes also into you?
Nietzsche. Friedrich Nietzsche.
Now, that's the one. Never could pronounce his name the same way twice.
Tell him about the observer effect.
Oh, I know that one. That's one of the basic premises of quantum theory. It states that the very act of watching, the observer affects the observed reality.
Quantum theory?
It was in the manual.
Now put them together, and what do you got?
Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo?
Well, that, and the takeover of human beings by invaders from outer space. Here's how it works. How long have people been watching these shows on the TV where you folks are from?
50 years.
Yep. And when you stare at these things over and over, it stares back, correct?
Yeah.
And just by watching this stuff, the people watching this stuff...
So you're saying Father Knows Best, Leave It to Beaver, Ozzy and Harriet is the abyss?
Yeah. And it stares back into whatever's watching. Changes whoever's watching it just a little bit, and you watch it again, and it changes you a little more.
And whatever you're watching changes too.
That's right. The abyss changes and adapts, and the people staring into it change and adapt to it. Now, what do you suppose that does to people after 50 years or so? What are people like where you're from?
Well, the literacy rate's gone down. People believe in angels instead of facts.
They're getting dumber, aren't they? They're not paying attention to what's going on around them. And sooner than later, bingo, Here come the Borg.
How do you know all this? You're not from around here, are you?
Not really. You might say I'm just kind of an observer.
How come you and Molly haven't been taken over?
Well, I'm not partial to water, and Molly here seems to exist entirely on Yoo-hoos.
So what are we supposed to do?
Well, I told you in the last episode. Take the AE-35, whatchamacallit, Molly and your little dog, and get out of here before it's too late. And that means now.
What'll happen if we don't leave right away?
Well, something's been building up, and I think they're going to make their move here pretty quick. There's a meeting in a little while in the town square with all the production companies. I don't think we should stick around and see what will happen next.
We?
You don't mind if I tag along, do you? I could be kind of handy if your machine breaks down again.
What's that?
It appears the fun has already started.
What the hell is that?
Looks like they're putting on their season finale.
Mike, look over there. The lights.
What the hell is it? It's aimed at the sky.
It's not the sky they're aiming at. It's the future.
Mike, look out!
Good God! It's...
Obscure metaphysical explanation to cover a phenomena. Reasons dredged out of the shadows to explain away that which cannot be explained. Call it parallel planes or just insanity. Whatever it is, you find it in the Twilight Zone.
Aliens and Republicans joining forces to take over the world? You don't hear something like that every day, friends and neighbors. Round and round she goes, and how weird it will get, nobody knows. Here's a glimpse into our next mind-shredding episode.
We don't have to be mean, because remember, no matter where you go, there you are.
For more heart-pounding excitement, be sure to tune in next time for the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
For some reason, that episode left me exhausted. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe is written and produced by Bob Alexander. Performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. Now, we're going to replay that episode tomorrow night. We normally do it on Friday, but just wanted to get it in. We were going to do this last Friday, but you know what happened last Friday. Anyway, it's great fun to do, and I frankly think that Bob Alexander's writing and is right out there in genius land. Crazy genius land. And we never know what's going to happen with the next episode until we get the script. And even then we don't know because it's just, we just do it. And Bob then adds the production values such as they are. You got to keep in mind, Bob lives in Vancouver. We live outside Atlanta. And this stuff goes whizzing back and forth over the pewters. Don't ask me. I still don't understand how a transistor works, much less this kind of stuff. So anyway, thanks to Bob Alexander and the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
Everybody's
10 before the hour. Correction. I said earlier that the so-called ambush marketers in the UK, for example, the guy that put 5 sausage rings out and the Olympic police came and told him to take it down or he'd be fined the equivalent of $30,000. And I said, that's how much in euros? Well, obviously, the UK did not go with euro, stayed on the pound sterling. So it'd be about £20,000. Thank you, Michael. What we're talking about here is in the Times, I think yesterday, about the sausage rings. The guy put 5 rings of sausage out. He used kielbasa. And when the Olympic marketing police showed up, they told him to take it down. He took it down. Then another one went up featuring 5 squares made out of sausage. He put another one up. The Olympic brand police came back. More legal action threatened. The guy who owns the shop said they're called Olympic rings, not Olympic squares. The Olympic police said it didn't matter. Take them down. Jesus God. Now, according to the Times, the sausage case has come to symbolize the imperious way in which London organizers have attempted to protect the Olympic brand from ambush marketing. Until there was an protest, workers preparing for the opening and closing ceremonies could eat fish and chips, but not sausage and chips. Chips being French fries. Not burgers and chips. And couldn't eat just plain chips. Unless they were served by McDonald's, which holds exclusive French fry rights at the Olympic stadiums. Can you believe this? Of course you can. Even the parents of Kate Middleton, the Duchess of Cambridge, and their party supply company came under scrutiny. According to news reports, organizers asked for amendments to a website that featured an Olympic torch and a woman throwing a javelin under the headline, "Let the Games Begin." That was the Middleton's website, I guess. They got off lightly compared with the cafe in Plymouth, England, that was forced to quit serving its flaming torch baguette. The House Cafe in South London was ordered to remove interlocking Olympic rings made from bagels. And La Rose Florist in Stoke-on-Trent also had to dismantle affronting rings fashioned from tissue paper. Sebastian Coe, the chief Olympic organizer, set off a stir in a radio interview last Friday, saying that spectators probably would not be allowed into stadiums wearing Pepsi T-shirts, given that Coke was the official soft drink sponsor. One reader wrote to the Telegraph of London suggesting, quote, everyone should just turn up naked, claiming, we weren't sure of the guidelines, and see what happens. I mean, this is just goddamn insanity. They should have been to the 96 Olympics here in Atlanta. I mean, it looked like a goddamn, I'll tell you, you know, Atlanta's a great southern city, right? But when we, the opening ceremony, remember, we had pickup trucks, monster trucks come rolling into the stadium. That was the Atlanta, that was Georgia organizer. Billy Payne is the one who organized. He used to, what did Billy Payne do? Was he associated with the University of Georgia or something? He was a car salesman? Oh, my God. But leading to the Olympic Park, which was in downtown Atlanta, every side street was just chock-a-block with tchotchkes made in who knows, Vietnam, China, the Philippines, little villages in Northwest India or someplace, selling crap and garbage, and the Olympic logo was just,
I mean, it was anybody could make it. You could get together four friends and turn yourself into the five rings. It didn't make any difference. Everybody would just go, oh, yeah, man, Olympics, Olympics. The T-shirts were being bootlegged. They're not even bootlegged. They're just sold openly. The point I'm trying to make here is that the Atlanta Olympics in 1996 were just an absolute embarrassment. And the weird part was, I had a house on Claremont Avenue at the time in Decatur, Georgia. And the torch came right by the front of our house. And Claremont Avenue, just, you know, it's a city street. And we knew where the route was going to be, so we invited some friends over. So we're sitting out on the lawn in the morning when the parade came by and the torchbearer, and we're sitting there eating breakfast on the porch. And the guy comes running by. And, you know, followed by pickup trucks and I don't know. It was just embarrassing. And Kathy and my oldest daughter were, what'd they call you guys? You had to wear those little brown and white outfits. What were you called?
Crowd leaders.
They volunteered to work the main stadium. And, they had to show up for training, and I think both Kathy and my daughter lasted about 3 days. But the restrictions on the trainers were insane. You couldn't bring any fluids into the stadium. You couldn't bring in water. You couldn't bring in anything, and they expected the volunteers to work through the training for 10 hours a day in the blazing sun in Georgia, for God's sake. I mean, it's just sick. I think the whole Olympic thing, I'm just talking about personal experience now, but I just think the whole Olympic thing has become a farce, a joke, and it ought to just be just trash. Let the athletes compete wherever they want to compete, but get it out of the filthy hands of this corporatist, capitalist horror called the Olympic Committee. This is the Malloy program. Welcome back. So anyway, the interesting subtext to the Olympics is the absolutely desperate death struggle that the people who the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, that owns all the copyrights to anything having to do with the Olympics. You know, God forbid some little kid in one of the suburbs of London would open up a little lemonade stand and put five colored rings up on her sign. That would be the end of it. You know, they'd come out, they'd bring a goddamn flamethrower out. But it's got to that point. Everything, we've talked about this so many times, it's just ridiculous to even talk about it further. I can remember, and it wasn't that long ago, the Olympics were supposed to be totally amateur. Remember that? The athletes, And the IOC was real strict about that. If any Olympic athlete, I can remember a couple, I don't remember what sport, what year, or when, but sometime in the past 40 years, I can remember athletes being told, no, you can't compete, because maybe 5 years prior to being selected for the Olympic team, they had gotten a box of candy from the Hershey Company or something. You know, I mean, it was that ridiculous. And it also seemed like the IOC, who was the guy who retired? I think he's dead now. The head of the IOC, who is, I think he was Austrian, which is very fitting. What was his name? Somebody will send it to me, I'm sure. But, No, not him. But he was the one, I think, that a lot of the, National Olympic committees just got over him. I mean, he was just an absolute little Nazi dictator. But as I watched the Olympics devolve into nothing more than, first of all, remember, it's supposed to be individual competition, right? Yeah. I realize that was the original idea. But when the Olympics were brought back, wasn't that supposed to be? And of course, Hitler in the 1936 Olympics, he was going to have none of that until Jesse Owens came out and just beat the living hell out of the master race with 4 gold medals. But it became Team USA and team this and team that. Individual membership or individual athleticism only mattered insofar as you were able to win medals for your country. So they'd have the medal count. That was another thing that used to drive me just goddamn insane. Every day of the Olympics, they had the medal count on whatever network was carrying it. This year it's NBC. I guess it's been NBC for quite some time. But they put the numbers up there. Total medals, how many gold, silver, bronze, and ranked the countries as to how many medals. Now, during the so-called Cold War, which was not cold, between the United States and the Soviet Union, it was madness, just madness in the medal count. And remember how the Ruskies, well, the Soviet bloc, they always used to they would take men athletes, and I don't know, make them look like women or something, and let them compete in the women's sports, and they would get found out. Remember all that craziness? But this Juan Samaranch, thank you. Juan Samaranch. I guess he was Spanish. He wasn't Austrian. I don't know what he was. He was just a little tyrant. I'll never forget in 1990 when they announced the city for the 96 Olympics. And there was this, everyone held their breath. And the city selected is Atlanta. And our mayor at the time, Maynard Jackson, was there, and Andy Young was there, and everybody was there. I think Jackson was mayor then. And everybody was wherever that was announced. And they just, you could see, they were like fainting. The city officials like, oh my God, we did it. And the Olympics in 1996 here in Atlanta were some of the most cheesy. I'm not talking about the athletes. I'm talking about the whole setup. It was just ridiculous. It was an embarrassment. It was just like, oh my God. But anyway, Olympics, Schmolympics, the athletes, the swimmers, the gymnasts, the runners, all these different sports, they should hold the competition with no IOC. But just like everything else, it's been totally corporatized, so what am I talking about? It doesn't matter. Going back to what we were talking about last hour,
about gun control and how the gun nuts in this country, they always, you know, they always say that the Democratic president's going to take your guns away. And the only time there's been a presidential gun grab was after Katrina, when the National Guard and Blackwater went to New Orleans and they were relieving the citizenry of their guns. Where was the NRA then? You phony sons of bitches. You have nothing to do with gun rights and everything to do with your twisted neo-Nazi Republican right-wing politics. And you know it, and I know it, and the world should know it. The NRA is nothing but a nest of rat bastards. Every single one of you. Where were you, Wayne the Peter? Where were you, Wayne LaPierre? When Bush ordered guns to be grabbed in New Orleans, where were you? Hiding with your head so far up your ass you couldn't see daylight. And why did you do that? Well, because the people that had the guns were not white. Some of them weren't. NRA, cowardly, miserable bastards. You had your moment, boys, didn't you? Huh? You could have made an absolute screaming fit over the Bush crime family conducting a gun grab, which you miserable bastards always said would happen under a Democratic president, and it never has. But you just sat there with your mouths taped shut like the cowards you are. There's not an NRA member out there who's not just an absolute goddamn coward. You know it, I know it, and they know it. You have no spine, no backbone. You don't stand up to the Bush crime family when they were grabbing guns. You went and hid in the bushes, didn't you? Cowards. Ugh! Am I yelling again? Yeah. Romney had a, I don't know why I'm talking about Romney tonight. I guess because I get the sick feeling that he might be the next president. Not because people would vote him into office, but because the real power behind everything in this country, the corporatists, will rig the machines and they'll steal the election in key states where it's difficult to tell that the election was stolen. But normally I don't care about Romney. He can, you know, kiss my grits. But I got a couple more things about him tonight because he's such an obnoxious, rich little bastard, isn't he? Isn't he just an obnoxious little man, huh? You're open, 877-996-2556 if you want to call in. Yeah, a couple of people have emailed now. The neo-fascist that used to run the IOC was Avery Brundage. He was the one who would disqualify people if he could find athletes, if he could find even the slightest link between the athletes and any kind of commercial venture whatsoever, no matter how minute that may have been. It didn't make any difference. It was Avery Brundage, thanks to people who have... Juan Samaranch was just as bad. He was the one that was just arrogant beyond belief, right? Let's see who that was. Juan Samaranch. Samrock, Samrach, whatever. Doesn't matter. Tired of talking about it. The Romney campaign, according to the Washington Post Plumb Line, written by Greg Sargent, on their blog page, the Romney campaign held another one of its I Built This events yesterday in Florida to draw more attention to Obama's didn't build that quote. Remember what Obama said a week or so ago? People claim to be, I built this all by myself. No, you didn't, you arrogant little dumbass. Nobody builds anything by themselves in this country. It is a physical impossibility. Unless you go out in the woods and isolate yourself, don't use any electricity, to get off the grid, don't use the roads, don't use garbage pickup, don't use anything that anybody else has ever invented, don't use a hammer or a screwdriver, don't get any investment from anybody. Now, start with sticks and rocks and mud, and go ahead and build your goddamn gasoline-less car. Then you can say, I built this by myself! But... it's just like when Obama said about, when things get rough, people turn their guns and their Bibles, which is just an absolute truth. But this is the United States of America. We cannot handle truth. We cannot handle the truth. That line from A Few Good Men, it resonates. Every time I turn around, you can't handle the truth! Even though it was the wrong character saying it, but we can't. We are a nation built on lies. We are a nation that feeds itself lies. We are a nation that breathes lies. We suck up lies. We pretend all the time. This is fantasy land. Nothing here is real, especially our political system. It is a goddamn joke. It is air. It is toxic air. So when Obama says, nobody builds things by themselves, he's absolutely correct. But then this half-witted dork Romney and his people grab it. Now, one of the small business owner the Romney campaign showcased as an example of someone Obama had insulted was an owner of A.D. Morgan, a construction firm. However, Michael Van Sickler of the Tampa Bay Times did a little digging, and look what he found. According to his website, A.D. Morgan, a construction firm, has received at least $150 million since 1999 for work on government buildings, prisons, schools, libraries. The figure represents only the total from the fraction of news releases that included a dollar figure. The company lists more than 130 projects it has completed. Nearly all of them are in the public sector, public money. Tax money. As somebody remarked in another context, quote, Romney is having a hard time finding businesses that didn't get any help from the government, end quote. But the example of this A.D. Morgan construction company is particularly illustrates the idiocy of anyone in this country. I did it by myself. It's all mine. I built this country, this company by myself. No, you didn't. You did not. And nobody could. And stop saying that you did, because it makes you out to be an even bigger half-ass liar than you've already declared yourself to be. Stop it. You don't do anything on your own. Where did you get the financing? Where did you get the road for the trucks to bring? I'm not going to go down the list. I just hate that. I hate that arrogant Ayn Rand bull crap. I did it myself. In a pig's ass, you did it yourself. You can't even get out of bed by yourself. Somebody else invented an alarm clock to wake your ass up in the morning. Good God. Now, one of the owners of this construction company, someone named Rebecca Smith, continued her criticism of Obama. She said, quote, our president seems to oppose the success of small businesses. You see, this is what a Florida right-wing half-ass says. Obama is the most corporate president, the most business-oriented president, really, that we probably ever had. Bush wasn't, Cheney wasn't. All right, maybe Clinton was. But Obama's right up there. But, you know, if you take away their imaginary world from these right-wing toad eaters, they collapse.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. You want to call in or not? If not, we'll just block the lines again. I mean, why run up the bill, right? 877-996-2556 is the number. Romney, yeah. Back to this, I built this nonsense that comes from these Romney supporters. And, of course, this is what Romney's doing to try to embarrass the president, you know. And he said, well, the president says you didn't build anything. And that's not the point that Obama was trying to make. Dave Weigel, political writer, points out that this attitude shows that people who work hard don't want to think that the government's helped them out. And he says, I'd go a step further and point out that this woman, Rebecca Smith, one of the owners of A.D. Morgan, her own quote suggests that Obama is actually the one who's on her side. Obama believes that the kind of spending that this construction company gets, the money that they get, is a good thing, a good idea, because it creates works for companies just like hers. At a time when demand is low and companies like this are struggling. 130 projects this company listed has completed, nearly all of them in the public sector. And yet she has the audacity to stand up there and bust up at Obama. Obama is her best friend. This is the kind of craziness I hate. And then, you know, the dunderheads out there, the halfwits, the people who will never take any risks, never do anything except back on their asses and whine and complain and bitch. They will sit there and go, yeah, see, yeah, Obama's a socialist. Yeah, yeah. Did you hear what they said? The construction company owner lady? Did you hear what she said? Yeah, yeah. And these halfwits won't go to the company's own website and see how they've made their tens of millions of dollars off government projects, tax money. Ah, but no. We live in fantasy land. Everything in this country is a goddamn lie. Everything. Got an email here from Dallas Baker. He's a Seattle firefighter. Mike, I was listening to your show on AM 1090 in Seattle the other night and was intrigued by a comment you made. I love your show and pretty much always agree with your positions on the issues. But the other day you mentioned that unions are obsolete and we need to transition to guilds. All right, let me pause for just a second in Dallas's email. I did say unions are obsolete, but I didn't say that we need to transition to guilds. What I said was I prefer the idea. But it's an old idea, and I don't think we're going to go back to it. But let me go back to Dallas's email. He writes, I'm involved with Seattle Firefighters Union Local 27, and have some experiences with our brothers on the Seattle Police Department, who are also in a guild. In my experience, our union is frequently credited with being more sophisticated and responsible in dealing with the city in negotiations. I understand that there may be examples of exceptions, but I do not understand your statement that unions are obsolete. I'll come back to that in a second. It has always been my opinion that the unions are the last defense of middle-class workers, and now I'm worried that I may have put my allegiance in the wrong place. Please clarify for me. P.S. I'm a single father of a young daughter, so sometimes I miss your show since it is on pretty late in Seattle.
So I'd appreciate an email response, although I'll try to listen as much as I can. I just read that part, Dallas. I'm sorry. But it is not I who have declared unions obsolete. In the private sector, unions now represent about 7% of the workforce. Turn the statement around, it means 93% of workers in this country are not unionized. That is obsolete. When I was a kid growing up, about 37% of workers were unionized. And as a result of that, and these were workers in manufacturing, no matter what it was, steel manufacturing, auto manufacturing, glass manufacturing, furniture manufacturing, whatever it was, about 37, 38% of workers were unionized. The result of that was that when the unions cut deals with the companies to make their product and settled on a pay package or a benefit package or whatever, non-union shops would follow suit because they wanted to keep their workers. So if a union shop made sure its workers made $20 an hour, a non-union shop would probably make sure its workers made $18 or $19 an hour to keep them from, you know, going to work someplace else. Now, as far as unions being obsolete, with the exception of public employee workers like the fire department, like police departments, like school teachers, like government employees, I believe about 17 or 18% of public workers are still unionized. I may be wrong on that figure. But what I was talking about were private sector workers, where we're down to the fact that only about 7% of workers are unionized. The union movement is dead. It is completely dead. And Dale, or Dallas, you're right. Where you say it has always been my opinion that the unions are the last defense of middle-class workers. They were the first defense of middle-class workers. They built the middle class. There was no middle class, Dallas, until the unions started to exert their power. And that was pretty much after Roosevelt, once we got into World War II, post-World War II, that was the heyday of the unions. But there was no middle class to speak of. There were the ultra-wealthy, and then there were the working class. But there was no middle class. 10-year-olds would go into the mines. 12-year-olds would go into factories. There's no such thing as paid vacations. There's no such thing as overtime or time and a half. There was nothing until the unions came along. So the unions were not the last defense. They were the first defense. They built the middle class. Unions built the middle class, Dallas. Now, when you have, I don't care what it is, and it represents 7% of the whole, it is safe in my little world to say that that thing that only represents 7% is obsolete. It has been pushed out primarily. It started 30 years ago with Ronald Reagan. And once Reagan declared the ATC, Air Traffic Controllers Union, he fired them all. That was the signal. That was the signal that the corporatists, the capitalists were waiting for. If the president can violate everything and fire them, so by God can we. So there is no union movement in this country anymore that is able to withstand the onslaught, Dallas, of corporate America. Now that breaks my heart, and it's not my reality. It's not me talking. I am an observer. So, I hope that clarifies for you. And I respect the fact that you're a firefighter. My son Chris was a firefighter until he went into nursing. So I do respect what you do and the risk you take and the sacrifice you make, frankly. Anybody who works in especially firefighting or EMS work or what have you. It's real dangerous stuff. It's very, very much an honorable profession. But the union movement is in this country is dead. is still kicking a little bit. There's no brain activity. There is still some brain activity, but the heart is stopped. The pupils don't dilate when you shine a flashlight into the core, into the body. It's dead. It's dead, Dallas. The union movement is dead. And the workers were instrumental in killing it. The union bosses were partly instrumental in killing it because they, not because they were corrupt. In any organization, you're going to find corruption. But because they were willing to cut deals with the corporatists, with the capitalists that threw the workers under the bus. That's why it's dead. It is dead. It may twitch a little bit longer, but trust me, Dallas, it's dead. So, where are we? Here we are. Rolf is in Tacoma, Washington, listening to KPTK, right?
Yeah, I'm writing a letter to the right-wingers in my life. please grow your hair long so you can reach around and pull your head out of your butt.
Never happened. Never happened. Rolf is very comfortable in there for these people.
Well, yeah, but I was going to say it. And make sure your name is on the back of the belt so you know who the hell you are.
Okay. Well, send me a copy, will you?
All right,
Rolf, thank you. I appreciate the fact you're going to write that letter. I think it'll be a good one. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. The other night on this program, Harvey Wasserman's name came up. He has a weekly internet show on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. And Marlis sent me an email about this. He's been a leading critic of nuclear energy and exponent of renewable energy for decades. That's right, in talking about global climate change. The radio show is always archived and free if you want to check it out. So check this guy out. I went to his website, and I checked with my partner, John Sinton, who has known Harvey Wasserman for a long time. And this is somebody you ought to check out, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Harvey Wasserman. So check it out, okay? Okay. Now, it's not just Romney. Scott Brown has released a web ad this week criticizing Elizabeth Warren, his opponent in the Massachusetts Senate race. She's the Democrat. He's the neo-fascist. The ad denounces comments that she made in 2011 that have recently resurfaced. The ad titled, "Let America Be America," features Elizabeth Warren saying, quote, "There's nobody in this country who got rich on his own," end quote. I mean, folks, that's a fundamental truth. That's an elemental truth. That is a foundational truth. What the hell? I mean, why do people think otherwise? I mean, who is stupid enough, other than the right-wingers, to believe that people who, quote, succeed, end quote, whatever that means, I'm not sure what success means, the accumulation of things, the accumulation of money, the accumulation of how many jobs you destroyed as you made your fortune, I don't know what success means in this country. Does it mean being a poet? Does it mean being an artist? Does it mean being a philosopher? Does it mean being a school teacher who influences the minds of hundreds of children? Do we consider those people successes? Or is it always these sons of bitches who steal, pillage, loot, burn, defraud, like the banking industry, like the financial services industry? Who is a success as defined in this country? You know the answer as well as I do. But Elizabeth Warren's comment, there's nobody in this country who got rich on his own, similar to remarks Obama made this month that have resulted in a barrage of attacks from these filthy goddamn Republicans. So the Brown campaign, you know, all Republicans are the same. They are worms. They are weasels. They seized on that barrage of comments with a 2-minute, 30-second ad featuring footage of past presidents from both parties talking about free enterprise. Free enterprise. Isn't that funny? Now, you know, these right-wingers are willing to tell you freedom isn't free as they advocate for somebody else's son or daughter to go die for corporate America in Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, pick your country. Freedom isn't free! Ah, except if it's the first part of free enterprise, you see. Somehow, in this land of crazy, with the illusion, with the fact that we live in this huge envelope of lies, this kind of a lie takes hold. The ad appears to be getting buzz, according to ABC's The Note. It has received more than 250,000 views since Monday morning and is trending as the number one spot on YouTube news and politics category, according to a news release from the Brown campaign. Wow. So here's the problem, truth seeker. Anytime somebody in the political realm makes a true statement that can be used by these filthy, filthy right-wing Republicans, can be twisted by these filthy right-wing Republicans, and especially the vermin at the top of the heap, like Limbaugh and the other drug-addled freaks, who pollute the airwaves every day 24/7. If any comment that is truthful has a little bit of wiggle room where these filthy pigs can shove some kind of a probe underneath the statement and start pumping and prying it up and making it float loose and say, look! Obama and Warren says nobody in this country ever made it on their own. Well, I'll be goddamned. Didn't you make it on your own, Mr. Small Businessman?
Yeah, I sure did.
No, you didn't. Nobody makes it on their own. Nobody. Nobody. Nobody ever has. Nobody ever will. The original fortunes in this country were made because the slave owners, well, owned slaves. Did Thomas Jefferson get out there and chop the cotton and the tobacco? I don't think so. Did Dale Carnegie get to work in the steel mines? I don't think so. Did J.D. Rockefeller, whatever the hell his name was, the original Rockefeller, did he go out and dig holes in the ground and discover? I don't think so. But that's the mythology. And how many of these slobs inherited all kinds of wealth? How much wealth did Mitt Romney inherit before he started stealing and lying and defrauding? You show me a great fortune, I will show you theft, fraud, lies, and deceit somewhere in the accumulation of that fortune. So what is success in this country? Is it somebody who writes poetry, somebody who teaches? How about the guy who wrote me The Firefighter? Huh? If a house is on fire, will Mitt Romney rush to put it out? We'll be back after the break.
back. It is 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Clark Morgan. Thank you, Clark. His message? The Mike Malloy Show. There's nothing like it on the radio. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Well, that's true. That's very true. Thank you, Clark. Of course, that's not always a compliment. Well, thanks, Clark. The Mike Malloy Show. There's nothing like it on the radio. All right. Appreciate it, Clark. All right. Before I get these emails, David is in Kettering, Ohio, listening online. Hello, David.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. I just watching the news while I was waiting. They're closing down two local grocery stores, putting off 300 people out of work because Walmart built a superstore down the street from.
Yep, yep. There you go.
Yeah, and I know those people. They're nice people. Their prices are good, but mm-hmm. we can't have that, you know.
I hear you.
Well, anyway, last night you were talking about the Greenland ice cap melting, and you mentioned this place called the Climate Central.
Yeah.
Well, I watch Weather Channel when they're not doing Olympics crap, and they were talking about the derechos and drought at the same time. We had one again tonight.
Now, what was it?
A derecho. That's a straight line wind.
I've never heard that term until this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hear it a lot up here because we get a lot of those. We're just off in the Tornado Alley. We're outside of Xenia where the April 4th in 19...
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. I grew up in Toledo, so I know about that end of Tornado Alley.
Yeah.
We used to get them just south of Toledo all the time. But derecho or derecho, how do you say it?
Yeah, I think it's derecho. I'm not derecho. Positive because it's spelled different from its pronunciation.
So that's a line of violent thunderstorms.
Yeah, with
okay.
the straight line winds. And we've been getting those on a regular basis for mm-hmm. the last 2 or 3 years. They can't predict what the weather is going to be from the morning to the evening,
mm-hmm.
but there's no global warming. So
no.
They were talking about it on the Weather Channel, and the person they were talking from the Climate Central was assuring us that it really wasn't that serious a thing. It really didn't have to do much with global warming, even though that might have an effect on it. And then when you were talking about the Greenland ice cap, you said something about it's not such a big deal because it will, you know, that's just the top layer.
Well, no, I think it is a big deal. I was just quoting from an article that said this is a common occurrence. Usually every year, Iceland or Greenland loses about 40% of the top layer of the ice. This year it's 97%. And that's what's making the climatologists and the scientists take notice and get worried.
Yeah,
so it is a big deal. It's just not the huge ice mass that covers Greenland. That's not melting. Well, it probably is, but I mean, 97% of it is not gone. It was 97% of the top layer.
Yeah, well, I'm convinced that it's worse than they're telling us.
Well, it probably is. You know,
I studied thermodynamics, and it's a scary thing.
I hear you.
Well, anyway, I wanted to tell you something additionally. I thought this up a little while ago. You give a man a fish, you know.
Yeah,
that
right,
thing.
Right.
Give a man a duck, you feed him for a day. Teach a man to duck, and he's got a career in politics.
Okay. Thanks, David.
Thank you, Mike.
All
take
right,
care,
sir.
Kathy and Molly, too.
I'll do it. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate you checking in. Teach a man to duck. From another Bob. He writes, oh, and about regulation, Mike, there is another thing you will not hear on the mainstream media. Much of the regulation placed on small businesses is pushed by the Chamber of Commerce and the big business lobby to drive out competition. This is done in Congress, but also to a large extent at the local level. Eminent Domain, Walmart, etc., the list is endless. But, oh, blame Obama. Once again, it's the power of money and media. Torches and pitchforks? Oh, well, keep speaking truth to power, Mike. I'm a subscriber and a sometime sponsor. Take care and keep it lit. Signed, another Bob. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Well, I didn't know about that. But it makes perfect sense. Yeah, drive out the competition. We had a situation not far from here in Decatur, Georgia. There's a strip mall that's kind of been sitting there, not really doing anything.
got some abandoned buildings in it. It has a recycle store, you know, a last chance. What do you call it, Kathy? A thrift store. Couldn't think of it. And that's where we get a lot of Molly's kid clothes. You know, we go there, and Kathy goes there to buy jeans because you know you can go in there and get a pair of Calvin Klein jeans for $4. You know, but. I don't go there because most of the men's stuff is not, you know, cotton. It's some synthetic fiber, and I just hate that. You know, I just hate it. So, but we do get a lot of things there. Well, that, and just dirt cheap. I mean, 50 cents, a dollar. You know, we used to outfit Molly for preschool for the whole year for $8.50. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But anyway, I digress. Oh my God, I digress. That area, there was a put before the county planning commission, or the city planning commission, because I believe that's in the city of Decatur. It was put before the planning commission. Walmart wants to build a store there. Not one of the big superstores, but you know, a huge Walmart. And the people in Decatur said no, absolutely no. The planning commission said yes, absolutely yes, because they're looking, of course, at the tax base. All right, that's chapter one. Here's chapter two. There's a store that Kathy likes to go to called Trader Joe's. Now, I don't know the history of Trader Joe's. Please don't send me an email and tell me that they're run by right-wing corporatists who are trying to destroy the planet. All I know is it's a chain. I understand it's a chain. But the people who work inside Trader Joe's, they're mostly young people. They're really friendly. It's a great place to shop. You can get stuff at reasonable. I'm talking about food and produce, and they carry a lot of organics. Not everything's organic. They'll tell you what's organic, what's not organic. But they have a nice business, and there might be five or six of them in the Atlanta area. So Trader Joe's was going to open a store in that almost abandoned strip mall. They had all the plans around the board. They were going to do it. As soon as Walmart applied for the building permit or whatever they're going to get, Trader Joe's said, "We're out of here. We're out of here." Because there's no competition. You cannot compete with this behemoth son of a bitch. And what was the stat I shared with you the other night? That the Walton family that owns Walmart have amassed more wealth than 48 million American families. Or was it 41% of American families? However it translated out. Yeah, well, that would be more than 48 million families. How many? Well, I don't know. What the hell? But they have more wealth, this family, than 41% of Americans. And I think it was 48 million families. I mean, that kind of a statistic is staggering. That's when you've got to bring out the guillotine. You have to, because that kind of wealth disparity is beyond obscene. It's into something else. I can't even think of the word. You know, in a country where everything is illusion, everything is a lie, everything is bat crap, and then you have this family that just keeps pumping junk into the hands of Americans, just junk. Oh, I know, big deal. They decide they're going to try to sell organics, or I think it was Walmart. They're going to try to make their food. They're going to offer organics. Oh, really? Says who? Where's it coming from? Where's it grown? How far is it being shipped? Organics, my ass. This is Walmart. They don't care about anything. How many little town, small town, downtowns have been absolutely destroyed, crushed because of this greed filled? Are these people doing this, the Walton family, to bring cheap goods to America, like we need cheap goods? Or are they doing it to amass their own fortune? I mean, come on. I got to take a break again. I'm starting to choke up.
Thank you. There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there.
Redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look.
21 past the hour. Trader Joe's, John writes, Trader Joe's is owned by the Albrecht family, the richest family in Germany. Your comparison is with Walmart, owned by the richest family in the U.S. Nevertheless, Trader Joe's has a nice edge and in general does the right thing. Thought you'd like to know. Well, according to Wikipedia, I guess that's true now, but Trader Joe's started, in, California and, in 1979, it was purchased by a family trust set up by the late German businessman Theo Albrecht, one of the two brothers behind the German discount supermarket chain Aldi. Trader Joe's is named after its founder, Joe Columba. Columba began in 1958 as a greater Los Angeles area chain of Pronto Market convenience stores, blah, blah, blah. And as far as the Albrecht family is concerned, yeah, they're worth apparently I think Theo Albrecht, let me see here. Theo Albrecht was a German entrepreneur who in 2010 was ranked by Forbes as the 31st richest person in the world with a net worth of $16.7 billion. Boy, you just can't escape, can you? And you know what? He did it all by himself. Now, it wasn't Joe Columbo that started. No, not him. It was Joe Columba. Columbe ends in an E. Columbe with a U in it. Oh, God, who cares? I'm just saying. Even Trader Joe's is terrified of the Walmart behemoth. Thanks, John. And also, I got an email earlier about what Obama was saying. You know, you don't build things by yourself. Steve from Vallejo, California writes, Mike and Kathy, as an engineer, I want to tell you what Obama was talking about when he made that statement. He was talking about physically building a bridge. Listen carefully to the clip. He is talking about the bridge outside of the meeting hall. Really, everyone has misinterpreted what he said. Well, thanks, Steve. I didn't hear the original comment, but that doesn't surprise me. I mean, anything that Obama says right now that can be twisted into something that it isn't will be twisted. And Reg lets me know that, you know, when I mentioned that ABC's The Note talking about Scott Brown's ad has gone viral with 250,000 hits. And what they didn't mention, Reg points out, the YouTube video made by Elizabeth Warren has had 916,000 viewers to date. Did they put out a special notice that her video had gone viral? No. See now, who would have known? Thanks, Reg. Scott Brown, where he's accusing Elizabeth Warren of the same thing that the little pissant Romney is accusing Obama is. Scott Warren's video has, you know, The Note, ABC's The Note, puts out this piece. Oh, 250,000 hits! Well, Elizabeth Warren's has received almost 1 million hits. Any mention of that? Of course not. Of course not. All right. Clint is in Dearborn, Michigan, one of our correspondents who sends us a lot of info. Hi, Clint.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks. I'm sick of the heat up here, but...
I figured it was about time for you to call in. You call about every 2 years.
Well, I was in the hospital a little bit, so...
Okay. Are you okay now?
Yeah, I had a little congestive heart failure.
Oh, a little congestive... Well, thank goodness it wasn't a lot.
But anyways, calling about your story, you were talking about the unions and union busting and things. Well, you know, living up in here in Detroit,
sure.
We know what the union busing has done to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was going to say the United Auto Workers were part of that union busting, even though they, you know,
they
were part of the erosion of the power of the unions in Detroit. Every time contract negotiations would come up and these auto makers would start threatening the unions, if you don't, if you don't concede, we'll be forced to close. Until finally, the only way the auto manufacturers, at least two of the big ones, the only way they were able to handle it was to declare bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And then take a major bailout, which I'm glad they got. I'm not arguing the bailout. And now look what you've got up there, Clint. You got workers who are still making a base salary of $26 an hour, but you also have workers who are making $13.
Yeah.
Hey, hold on. Clint, will you hold on?
Sure.
All right, I got to do a break here, and we'll come back. And we'll take your call if you're on hold, too. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's going to be all right. I saw the boss come a-walking down along the factory line, saying, boys, we have to tighten up our belts. But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago, and I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make him lose any sleep at night. Just as long as fate is out there busting somebody else's bubbles, everything is gonna be alright.
Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored by Clark Morgan. Thank you, Clark. And Clark's message, the Mike Malloy Show, there's nothing like it on the radio. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Thanks, Clark. We appreciate it very much. All right, back to Clint in Dearborn. Thanks for holding on, Clint. All right, now we were talking about unions. I'm sure you were going to mention the fact that so many working class people, Democrats, voted for Reagan.
Well, what I was going to relate that to is, you know, at the time when Ronnie came into office, I was working for Cunningham Drugstores. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember Cunningham, sure.
Yeah, remember how he helped Cunningham suddenly disappear and emerge as another company?
No, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, because they busted our union, so just like the airline at the Patco at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always remembered Ronald Reagan fondly after that.
But you've lived your life in Dearborn, which arguably is Detroit, so you know how the unions have become obsolete, I would imagine, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you drive around Detroit and you see all the desolation, you know. I mean, granted, they're doing a lot to fix up, you know, the downtown and you know, different area, midtown area and things like that, but there's parts of Detroit you can drive through, and there's blocks after blocks after blocks of beautiful homes that are just derelict.
Oh, I know. The last time I was in Detroit, which I have to admit was some time ago, but Kathy and I went over there off of, Woodward Avenue? No, mm-hmm. where all those homes are. I mean, they are absolute mansions. It was not far from where the UAW had its...
Jefferson, maybe?
Jefferson, I think. Yeah, on Jefferson. Those mm-hmm. huge, big homes, they were just astonishing. And we drove up and down those streets with the windows busted open, the doors off the hinges, weeds growing out of the foyer, crackheads wandering around. I mean, great, big houses that have just been abandoned. Just people walked away from them. It was hard to look at that because mm-hmm. this was the housing stock in Detroit that had there been some money in that city, had there been a tax base, had there been something where those houses could have been saved, it could have been sold for $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
God only knows that when they were built, they were probably worth the equivalent of $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, $900,000. I mean, mm-hmm. great, big, gorgeous homes just falling mm-hmm. apart, rotting, trees growing through the roof.
I know.
It was just horrible. Just
and you
horrible.
Think of the old Packard plant in Detroit that's just sitting there rotting it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I don't think Detroit is ever going to make a comeback. Do you?
I think it's starting to, but it's not going to be the Detroit that we used
well,
to.
Well, that's what I meant. At one time, Detroit was the fifth biggest city in the United States, and it was just Detroit hummed. You could hear it all over the planet. Detroit was Detroit, for God's sake. They talked about Detroit the same way they talk about the White House. They would talk about, well, what's coming out of Detroit this week? You know, referring mm-hmm. to the auto industry. Everybody knew what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Just like we say, what's coming out of the White House this week? Well, what's coming out of Detroit? You don't hear that any other city.
Yeah.
You don't hear what's coming out of New York, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco. But Detroit, everyone knew what you were talking about. So that's never going to come back. And probably it's probably a good thing. What I'm thinking, what I've read, is that there's an awful lot of urban farming that is trying to take hold there, where mm-hmm. these huge plots of ground, if they just clear off the remains of these houses, these abandoned buildings, and turn it into community farming, mm-hmm. where people can raise food, for God's sake. I mean, it just sounds kind of like this is the future. Detroit is the future.
Yeah, don't you think your hometown in Toledo is like that too?
Not quite as bad as Detroit. We had other industries. We were a big feeder city for mm-hmm. Detroit, but we also had the glass industry that there's still a market for. We had Toledo has moved into a solar panel industry. They've moved into tech, higher tech stuff. But Toledo, it's still a ghost of what it was. We just don't have those vast areas like Detroit has of just a wasteland. Although a friend of mine in Toledo about 2 years ago sent me a video that he had shot that just showed house after house, building after building, in Toledo closed down, boarded up, shut mm-hmm. down. And that whole so-called Rust Belt area is just heartbreaking. Absolutely
yeah.
heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Clint, thanks for checking in. I hope you'll call more than just every 2 years, all right?
Yeah, I'll try to make a better deal with that.
And take it easy with your health. Take your potassium tablets, all right?
Yeah, okay. Thanks. And tell Kathy I enjoyed talking to her, too.
I will. Thanks, Clint. Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Grant is in Effingham, Illinois. Hello, Grant.
Hey, nice to talk to you again.
Yes, sir.
So how in the world did the right-wingers get ordinary people to believe that they have their best interest at heart, that we don't need... I'm a truck driver, and I deal with this every day on my job from people.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't need any retirement. We don't need a livable wage anymore. We sure don't need Social Security.
Don't need health care. We don't need health care.
Yeah. Hell, we don't even need any teeth anymore.
Right.
I mean, how did they do that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I chalk it up to people being stupid, but they're stupid, and then there's criminally stupid. There's terminally ignorant. You know, stupid can be cured, or ignorant can be cured. Stupid is just is forever. I don't know what happened. I have no idea, Grant. I don't know how the working class or the middle class in this country started to think that Republicans would give them a better deal, when every time Republicans are elected, things get worse and worse and worse, and yet the bastards continue to get elected. I have no idea.
But they don't only... You know, they don't only back them, they're rabid about it.
I know.
I mean, when I try to talk to people, you know, why does it not bother you that you're going to vote for a guy? All we heard about during the Clinton administration was he was a draft dodger and a murderer mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. And now you're going to vote for a guy that's the Republican that stole money, hides it overseas, and is a draft dodger. And by God, they look at me like they're going to stab me with their fork in the Denny.
Plus, you might point out to these people, plus he's a member of a religious cult that thinks that, I don't know what they think, that they kind of believe like fundamentalist, Islamists, I guess, that when they die, and they go to heaven, they get 100 wives or something. Plus
so
they're...
How does that happen?
Huh?
How did that happen?
I don't know. It's just amazing. I'll tell you how it happened. The only thing I can come up with is at some point in the past 30, 35 years, this country went through some kind of a space-time warp continuum. We slid through, and in the process of doing this, I think they'll discover this when they figure out what dark matter is, in the process of going through this rift, in this rip in time and space, everybody went insane, except for about 6 or 7 or 8% of us, and we are going insane slowly because we know that everyone else already is.
Well, Mike, I must have been drinking beer that night.
Well, me too.
Because I don't remember that.
I mean, those of us who weren't affected, it was like maybe it was like a dream or some kind of a drug trip or we just missed it. But I
just
think
woke up in crazy world.
Well, that's it. I think something happened. Something happened. And that's the only explanation I have, Grant.
Okay, man.
I'm sorry.
Well, I love you, Mike. I wish I'd give you a hug, but I just beat my head against the wall because I'm 48 now, and I want to get out of this business at 60. And you know, I've been out here 25 years.
Oh my God.
I was in the Army twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't want to keep this up the rest of my life, man. They stole my 401k. I saw a report not too long ago that the average 401k had $22,000 in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what? That's not even 1 year's salary.
I know.
And how is that? And you ask people, how in the hell is that a good thing? Well, don't you ask Mitt Romney for anything.
I don't get it, Grant. I don't get it. It's madness. It's just total madness.
It is madness. And he's one of the ones that stole the money out of my 401k.
Sure he is. Well, just keep your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel, okay?
Yeah, I'll try to.
Okay, Grant, thank you.
I'll see you, Mike.
All right, take it easy, sir. What I mean by that is I want Grant to, you know, I can get raving crazy in here, but I'm not driving a big rig. Just easy, Grant. Everything he says is true. How did this happen? I don't know.
Well, rather than the space-time continuum rift, which I think is a valid theory, do you think it could have possibly been the civil rights movement, the Kennedy assassination, the Vietnam War were sort of a 1-2-3 whammy for this country and everybody
went nuts?
Was sort of struck by fear.
Well, it struck fear into me, but that still doesn't explain the fact that the working class, the middle class in this country, apparently made a conscious decision to commit suicide and has been in the process of committing suicide for 30 years. Not just their own suicide and their children, but the whole goddamn planet. This hour has been sponsored by Clark Morgan. Thank you, Clark. His message, the Mike Malloy Show, there's nothing like it on the radio. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Thank you, Clark. Thanks for the sponsorship, and thanks for the comment, too, or the message, I should say. Where are we here? Steve is in Charleston, West Virginia, listening on Sirius.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, Steve.
How are you?
Huh?
How are you?
I'm fine. Why are we yelling?
I don't know. I'm sitting in my car in the middle of a rainstorm.
Oh, my God.
I love your show. You are the man. And I've just got these thoughts swimming through my head. We have disenfranchised so many people, so many reformed criminals. And I think it would be a good idea, going back to our founding fathers, this would be a founding father-friendly idea, that we should have a constitutional amendment, no taxation without representation amendment, and if we're not going to let these people vote, then they shouldn't pay tax of any sort from anybody.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense. Now, you're talking about people who are having the right to vote taken from them, or people who what? I'm not real clear here.
Well, any citizen of the United States that doesn't have the right to vote,
yeah,
they shouldn't have to pay taxes. I mean, it seems to me that our founding fathers believed in no taxation without representation, although they really didn't. I mean, they believe that only free white men, landowners, should vote. But it's their illusion. We can use it. That's okay.
Well, by law, of course, everybody who is a citizen of the United States and over the age of 18 or 18 or older has a right to vote. So you don't need an amendment for that. It's the states that are passing laws to diminish or suppress Democratic votes on the theory that people who are the least likely to have or be able to get photo ID, especially when the requirements to get that photo ID are so stringent, that those people, older people, people who don't drive, people who, but usually, according to social scientists, those folks vote Democratic. So the idea here is to suppress or eliminate Democratic votes, which, see, Republicans can never, ever, 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 ever win an election fairly. It cannot be done unless they're a member of Congress who comes from an outdoor insane asylum, like Michelle Bachmann. Now, she can get elected because the people who put her in office are as crazy as she is. That's true in certain districts around the country. It's true of certain states that have a governor who is just out of his goddamn mind, just bat guano crazy. But that's because sane people stay home. Sane people say, I'm not going to vote because I know it's rigged. I know my vote is useless. I'm not going to do it. As far as people voting against their best interests or going back, if we went back to the founding fathers, they were just a bunch of slave owning, racist, genocidal pigs to begin with. We've glamorized them. We've made them into icons. We call them the fathers of the country. When in fact, if they were fathers of the country, boy, they did a good job, didn't they? Women couldn't vote. Slaves were considered three-fifths of a human being. The people who originally owned this place were just systematically tortured, butchered, filled with the bacterium. Any chance that they got? I wouldn't want to go back to that at all. Not at all. The revolutionaries, the people that allegedly founded the United States, were a bunch of murderous freaks. Okay, so they wanted to throw off English rule, but I don't think they were doing it because they believed in freedom. I think they were doing it because they wanted to amass big fortunes. The English, I don't think they had outlawed slavery. It took another half a century for the English to outlaw slavery, right? I probably got that wrong. But the so-called founding fathers of this country, they didn't like the fact that the English were encroaching on the soon-to-be Americans' right to be exploiters and fraudsters and liars and cheats and thieves and stinkers Anyway, thanks, Steve. Let me move on. I appreciate your call. Very quick, Kevin, we got about 2 minutes here.
Hey, Mike, I really appreciate it. I just wanted to comment on the question of why do people vote against their own best interests and vote for the right-wing nuts? And I seriously believe it has to do with the message. I know for myself, I like to feel like I am self-sufficient. Like, I take care of my family. When my kids need me, I'm there for them. And I think that's the message of Republicans is be self-sufficient, do it on your own. You don't need anybody else. And I think that kind of resonates with people, but they don't think past that, you know, to the, well, what about people who need help? You know, I used to be a staunch right wing. All you had to have was an R by your name and I'd vote for you. Well, I started getting educated and I realized just how wrong they are and how counterproductive it is to a society, a civilized society, to let people die for lack of medical care. It's insane.
Right.
It's absolutely insane. We have enough resources in this country that everybody could live well. And I'm not talking about redistributing wealth. I'm a big believer in work hard and earn, you know, you can have the big house and the cars. But you know what? You don't need $500 million or $1 billion or $20 billion. Give a little bit of it up.
Right.
Well, bring some other people up. Bring us all up.
No,
just a few.
Yeah, I hear you, Kevin, and I'm out of time. I hope you're going to call back in and we could talk about this again. But even the big house and the cars, I mean, that is, I think a lot of people are starting to come to consciousness and realize that is destructive, too. I mean, it just is. I don't know. Kevin, listen, drive safely. I appreciate your call. All right, folks, I'll see you tomorrow night, Friday night. Oh, thank God. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. If you've been wondering